You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Roto Experts in the Morning with your hosts, Mike Blewett and George Kurtz. Now, here's Mike and George.
Hour number two on the program. Mike and George taking you around the world of sports, around the fantasy world. And George, I got to ask you first, I've really only been able to catch highlights. I haven't been able to settle in. I've been traveling all week. Pittsburgh and D.C. and in basketball arenas. And, you know, hopefully I'll be able to help people with some brackets. But that's usually a fruitless effort on my own end. So we'll see what I can do there. George, do you even fill out a bracket?
What's a bracket?
Bracket for the tournament. I know you don't watch much.
Yeah, I, but do you even, like, I know what a bracket is.
You throw you throw $5 down, maybe get yourself in a pool or something like that.
I could literally, my daughters are 10 and 6. I could literally have them pick the teams out of a hat. They have just as good a chance of winning as I do. Don't know. I couldn't tell you. I can't tell you what the number one team overall is.
All right, that's a problem. Pete, do you fill out a bracket for the NCAA tournament? Do you get involved in any NCAA pools?
I would if I knew what was going on.
Jeez.
I mean, I've done it before. I've done it before, but like George said, I kind of do it blindly. Yeah. I know Iona, my alma mater, my college is in it. They won the MAC, so they have one of the bottom seeds.
They did win the MAC. They did
win
the
MAC. Will St. John's be in it, Mike?
St. John's will not be in it. St. John's is terrible.
See.
So, St. John's lost to
my school,
Villanova.
Mike.
Yeah, well, they stink.
See how he threw that in there, George? Just like they're terrible.
They
you
are terrible.
Stomp on me.
My alma mater is even worse. So, BC is the worst Power 5 basketball team in existence right now. So
incredible hockey team, though.
Yeah, but I don't even know what happened. I don't know what happened with them this weekend. They've had a really brutal February, and they might miss the NCAA tournament, which is for them like the base level of their success in a particular season. So I don't know what they did Friday and Saturday, but they're in their playoff run right now. So I'll have to, I'm sure people love to talk college hockey on this show, but in any event, I'll have to check it afterwards. So George, basically, your top teams are like. Villanova is probably the top team in the country right now. Your North Carolina, Kansas, Duke won the ACC tournament last night. While they haven't been one of the elite teams this season, they're playing really well right now. So just to give you some insight. But, yes, Pete's alma mater, Iona, is in it. A bunch of teams punched their tickets yesterday, getting automatic bids by winning their tournaments. There's a few more on the line today. But in any event, there you go. Maybe, George, I'll help you with a bracket, or Pete, I'll help you with a bracket and get you guys rolling this year. Sound like a deal?
Yeah, I'll do it. Right. I'm always up for a challenge.
George, you in?
No.
All right. George is out. In any event, I don't even know how I got started on that. But anyway, what I did want to talk about is that I didn't get a chance to watch too much of the WBC. Have you been dialed in at all, George? I know you said that it was going to be the type of thing where you weren't excited about, but given your three TV setup, you're going to throw the WBC on. Have you gotten a chance to watch much?
That's exactly what it is. It's just the way you described. And only if there's no hockey on the third TV I can put on. It's not that I like hockey better than baseball, but to me, hockey at this point is more important than the WBC. It's hard. It's like the Olympics. It's hard for me to take it seriously. Actually, I shouldn't say the Olympics. It's like the All-Star Games. It's hard for me to take this seriously if the best players aren't going to play, if they're looking for a reason not to go. You know, Team USA, they don't care. You know, Trout's not playing. Harper's not playing. They find reasons not to go. So it's
Mike Trout got a hole-in-one on the golf course apparently yesterday. That was the big news out of Mike Trout.
Oh, how good for him. I've never had a hole-in-one. It's extremely frustrating. But so, like I said, Mike, it's hard for me to take this seriously. You know, I haven't really watched much. I have social media. You know, I know what happened to Team USA yesterday, the big choke by Andrew Miller, the home runs that the DR hit. But like I said, win or lose, if Team USA won, I won't care. They lose, won't care. Yeah. I just, it's just not important to me. What's important to me is that my any leagues I have drafted in already, or any keeper leagues I have, that my players don't get hurt. Hearing Salvador Perez got hurt last night.
That's what I was going to lead to.
It's concerning to me.
Yeah, Sal Perez has to get an X-ray on his left knee. Omar Vizquel is a manager of Venezuela, and he said that Sal Perez has a loose knee. I don't think that's a medical term, so I think I'll just wait for the actual medical to come out of there and see what happens. Salvador Perez, George, we know you are not a huge fan of spending much at the position at all, but Salvador Perez is in NFBC average draft positions right now. He is the seventh catcher off the board, 130th pick, basically, in most drafts. So, you know, there's some value there, especially relative to his position.
Yes, we took a 130th pick overall. Obviously, in 10-team leagues, that's 14th round. 12-team leagues, that's about 8, 9, 10. It's about 11th round. So I'm fine with that. I know in the mock drafts we've done for other experts, which we are eventually apparently going to start this AL-only mock. I'm in 4 days waiting now. I've gotten Perez maybe in both leagues. So, and that's been around the time I've gotten him. Double-digit rounds for my first catcher. You know, I'm not big on catchers for reasons – mainly because I don't like the position. They get hurt. They have to squat 1,000 times, get hit with balls, bats, runners. They sit once a week. I'm not spending a premium pick or spending premium cap dollars on catcher. I'm not going to do it. Not unless the value just happens to fall for me.
Yeah, so you did mention in the other game, the U.S. playing the Dominican Republic, the U.S. blew a, I think it was a four-run lead or a three-run lead
Five.
Late. Five runs.
So
they're up 5.
Joke.
Nothing.
Joke.
Manny Machado hit a monstrous home run in that game. I think it was the first run of the game for the DR. They played in front of a crowd in Miami Marlins Stadium, Marlins Park, of nearly 38,000 fans, which is the largest ever for a baseball game at Marlins Park. Says more about the Marlins than anything else. But in any event, I was reading a tweet before the show, and they said that it was about a 90-10 split Dominican fans to U.S. fans. So you and I are not alone in not being all that excited about the World Baseball Classic. It basically was a home game for the Dominican Republic team, and it didn't play. U.S. couldn't close it out. Big comeback for the Dominican Republic. They avoided their first loss in this tournament since 2009. So, you know, just a rough outing for Andrew Miller. Marcus Stroman pitched really well for the U.S., 4 2/3, 3 hits, scoreless. So obviously these managers are managing the pitchers pretty lightly, given guys aren't going to throw more than 5 innings really in any given game, or at least any of these coveted major leaguers aren't going to. So the Dominican Republic still hasn't lost a WBC game in 8 years, and they've won 10 consecutive behind. I mean, they have a ridiculously stacked lineup, so it's no surprise that they could have some success against any pitcher, frankly, and Andrew Miller was the one who was touched up the most.
I'd say being touched up was putting it nicely. Sure, he got he got bombed. Anyway, look, I get four runs in the inning there. But like I said, I know most players probably care, but in the end, you still wonder if Andrew Miller is just treating this like pretty close to spring training, getting my work in. He wants to win, sure, but you know, in the end, Cleveland's paying my bills. You know, and I got to make sure I'm ready for the Indians this season. That's what's hard about this. And don't get me wrong, I don't think there's any perfect solution to this. I think the idea is great of the international tournament, but having it in spring training, probably not the right time. You can't have it after the season because then the pitchers are already dead. And no team's going to want their pitcher throwing, you know, another 10, 15, 20 innings in this tournament. That's not good for them. So, like I said, in the end, this comes to me, it's just an exhibition. You know, I would be much more interested, I'll keep saying it again, if all the players wanted to go and they were taking it seriously, then I'd be into it. But I think this comes down to a bigger thing for the international players than it does for the American players. You know, and I also don't like, and this is with the Olympics too, that all of a sudden you find, oh, I'm 180th Canadian. I'm going to go play for Team Canada. You know, that bothers me to no end. You know, if you don't have citizenship in a country, I don't think you should be able to play for them. I hate hearing these players. Oh, yeah, I'm going to go get my Italian citizenship so I can go play for Team Italy. I hate that.
Yeah, dude, here's the lineup for the Dominican. Just so, in case people haven't been paying attention, give you some sense of this lineup. They start at the top with Reyes. Manny Machado hits second. Robbie Cano third. Jose Bautista fourth. Santana is first baseman. Then Nelson Cruz hitting sixth. Adrian Beltre hitting seventh. Starlin Marte eighth. Castillo ninth. That is loaded. That's as good as any all-star team. They just have ridiculous hitters. And Edison Volquez looks like he started for them yesterday and gave up three runs over three and two-thirds. Nerys Diaz, Abad, Robles, Colome, Familia. So, you know, major leaguers all around, George. It's scarier than the American lineup, which was Kinsler, Adam Jones, Christian Yelich, Nolan Arenado, Eric Hosmer, Paul Goldschmidt, Giancarlo Stanton, Jonathan Lucroy, and Brandon Crawford. Clearly, not everybody has their best players out there, but those are the two lineups that you look at and you know, are impressive from top to bottom. So, entertaining game at the least. I don't know anybody that's way into the World Baseball Classic, but in tracking social media, some people in our industry have said it's been an endlessly entertaining tournament so far for those that have been watching it.
Yeah, listen. Team USA plays Canada tonight. I'll be watching that. I don't know how the rules work. I imagine Team USA has to win to advance to the second round. I'm just guessing here since they're 1-1 so far.
They do.
All right. So, yeah, I'll watch. Once again, I don't think there'll be anything else on at that time. You know, maybe The Walking Dead. I'll be watching that as well. But I'll be
interested. You're still in on that show, huh? Everybody, my sphere of influence in social media has had a lot of people bailing on that show.
I haven't seen that. I don't think I'm the fan of that some people are. I started late. I binged on it probably about 2 years ago, got into it. So I don't think I'm the fan that some people might be. But it's an entertaining show. I thought the first half of this season was blah. The second half of that was pretty good. I think they're getting back on target here. We can see where the storyline's going, you know, for the big battle with Nagin's group. But it's okay. In my mind, my TV in general is blah. Yeah, they don't have really new ideas anymore. They're all rehashed plot lines and stuff like that. I mean, I'm a big 24 guy. Not the new one. I mean, the old with Jack Bauer, Kiefer Sutherland. Loved that show. That was new and inventive, and it came back out. You know, you just didn't know what was going to happen. And it's funny, on Kiefer's new show, Designated Survivor, which is not a bad show, but the plot line is almost taken from the first season of 24. Just that Kiefer is now the president. And Maggie Q is Kiefer. It's almost the same exact thing. So and a lot of shows do this. They just regurgitate old plots of old shows and turn it into their show. And it's just it's disappointing. I generally use TV, Mike, as background fodder for work. You know, I'm writing, I'm doing rankings, answering, whatever I'm doing. TV's on the background. And I like the basic shows, your basic crime shows, because, hey, bad guy does something bad, good guys go get him, bad guy pays. It's a simple formula. I don't have to worry about watching it and paying attention to it all that much outside of maybe Game of Thrones, which I need Cliff Notes, a thesaurus, and probably George R. Martin to come to my house and explain to me what's going on.
You know, what's funny is I'm not a great multitasker in that regard, and I've heard Nando DeFino, our colleague, say this on air as well. When it comes to doing work, when I'm trying to write or I'm trying to do some research and prep for the show or whatever, I kind of need silence.
No, not me.
Occasionally, I can throw a game on in the background and throw it on mute, but then I end up pausing it because I want to watch the game, and I'm an hour, like I'm 45 minutes behind, and it just doesn't work out. My best bet is to either come to my office or sit at like the dining room table or something with no TV in front of me. So, is what it is. All right. Well,
I'm the opposite.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I envy that in some ways. I'm not great at it. So, in any event, we'll be back in a couple of minutes. We'll continue to talk about baseball, some other news that I saw recently, get George's opinion on it. So, Mike and George, back after this. Mike and George back. Talk a little bit about news in baseball. You know, George, before I get to that, got home yesterday, flew in late, mid to late afternoon yesterday, and got two little kids. I think, you know, I think people have listened to the show, realize that I have two little ones. So my wife wanted to get them out of the house. They're bouncing off the walls. It's been freezing in New York. So, you know, they kind of get stir crazy. So
what are you talking about? 15 degrees, not nice for you?
Yeah. So I took them out as soon as I got home. I took them out for like 10 minutes because they wanted to be outside. And even them, you know, it wasn't hard to convince them to go back inside. Because it was pretty brutal yesterday afternoon, just getting off the airplane and feeling that. I mean, it wasn't nice in Pittsburgh or D.C. either, but it was rough getting off that, coming out of that airplane yesterday. In any event, we took them to go look at a swing set, which you're looking at in the backyard. That's not the highlight of the day. The highlight is that we went to Benihana, which I hadn't been to a Benihana-style restaurant in a while. But they had never been, so they were super pumped. My son Owen is like just watching the tricks, the fire tricks, the Ginsu knife type spatula tricks that the guy was doing, flipping the pieces of chicken or shrimp into his hat and all that kind of stuff. So I would ask you, have you ever taken your kids? Have you ever been to a restaurant like that? Would they be pumped for something like that?
Yeah, Hibachi. We've been there many times, actually. Yeah. They have plenty of them out here where I am. And you're right. It's great entertainment for the kids. They get the volcano with the fire volcano and all the, I said, all the tricks. And usually they're throwing the zucchini into your mouth too, trying to flip it in there. It's a lot of fun. Uh-huh. So as my youngest daughter likes to say, I want to be entertained while I eat. That's just great.
So, well, yeah, that accomplished the goal. So. I couldn't believe like how long they lasted. You know, every once in a while, like, look, going out to eat with the kids, little kids, as you could attest, George, is really hard. Like, it's just not an easy thing to do. And usually we opt not to do it because it's just you're spending a bunch of money. You're not really enjoying yourself. If they were having a lot of fun, it would be fine. You'd just pay for it. But sometimes it just goes south, especially when you have a baby. You don't know if she's going to be tired. You don't know exactly how she's going to react. Like, we went out to lunch for my birthday last week, and we had to eat so fast because they were starting to melt down that it wasn't enjoyable. It was just like we scarfed our food down in 20 minutes, and then we had to wrap up and get out of there. Like, we weren't even in the restaurant for 45. Yesterday, they hung in for like an hour and a half, and it's a totally different experience.
You know what would have been the perfect thing? The perfect thing would have been if Pete Considine would have played that happy birthday tune again as soon as you said that.
I actually thought he was going to. So
that would have been fantastic. I think I've been rolling on the ground.
Creepy horror music, birthday music. I think he's doing some editing right now, so he wasn't right at the controls at the time. But in any event, anyway, it was a nice little respite from the house and from the cold as we got to have some Benihana. So,
and by the way, I know what you're feeling about the kids having meltdowns. Sometimes, yes, you gobble down your food quite quickly.
At my birthday lunch, I ate so fast. I'm not really somebody who likes to do that, but I ate so fast. I was full for hours, you know, like it almost hurt because it was like being in an eating competition. You know, I like having the kids out and all that kind of stuff, but out to dinner is really or out to a meal is always a tough thing. If it's a decent restaurant, meaning not a diner, not a greasy spoon kind of thing, you know, you can always bring the kids to that and the place gets a little messy. You don't feel so guilty. But we left that Hibachi place yesterday and it was like... I mean, it was a crime scene, what my daughter and son had done to the table. So we apologize profusely to the people, but yeah, they're like, it's fine. We get kids in here all the time. So in any event, that was fun. So wanted to move on to some baseball news. David Price threw in the cage yesterday. Red Sox manager John Farrell was sort of positive about it. You know, we had the worst concerns a couple of weeks ago when he was getting a second opinion from James Andrews, but it looks like David Price is on the mend and he's getting in there and throwing. So it'll be like kind of in the extended spring training situation here. We'll see if he can be back for opening day. Still got a few weeks to go, but taking him along slowly as they should. He's a massive investment.
He is. He's also a massive risk. for fantasy owners. Now, Matt and I talked about him yesterday. This is a guy, before this news came out, was going in rounds three, round four, somewhere in that range, a top 40, top 50 player. How far down does he go down your draft board now? Because he's a gamble. No matter how you look at it, he is a gamble now. We don't know if that elbow is going to hold up, a weeks, months, next season, years. The good news is, when he went to visit Andrews, not only did he come back, pretty healthy, but he doesn't need to go back to him, just to check it out again. That's good news. But still, there's some reason to worry here. I'll be staying away from him in most leagues. I'm generally not going to take that chance unless the value's there. He lasts the double-digit rounds. Okay. Then, the risk is worth it's worth it there. I'll take a shot at him. But I'm not going to drop him, just take him round five, round six, which I think is where he's going now. He's dropped a couple of rounds. But for me, the risk won't be worth it to me. I'm not going for it.
He has. Between NFBC and Fantasy Pros, I'm seeing he's like in the 50s right now, as high as 60. So that's where his rankings are falling right now. But NFBC is really tracking those drafts, and he's fallen. He's the 12th starting pitcher now. It says average pick of 51 right now. So I do think in some ways that it's probably even a little bit lower than that as people we had risks like this last year. I remember there was a lot of in the years past. I know there was questions with you, Darvish, in the past, and people saying, well, where are you going to take him? Would you be willing to take a risk? And, I'm with you. I'm usually going to be risk-averse to this kind of stuff. When there's so many other starting pitchers right around him that I could go with, I'll probably just go up and snag one of those guys or, frankly, wait until somebody else makes the move on David Price. As you said, there's always a value at some point, but in the way I'm approaching it, it's unlikely that I'll have him on any teams. I'm just going to let somebody else take that chance.
Yeah, I'm the same way. Especially in that round. And you mentioned he's dropping now, which means he's dropped further than that. If he's already in ADPs, unless you got an ADP of only the last week's drafts, if he's just falling around, he's probably falling three and four rounds. And he'll continue to fall somewhat. He'll level up at some point. People will feel better about him if we see him pitch in a spring training game again. That'll make us feel much more comfortable taking him. But my problem is this. He may pitch, let's say he pitches in two spring training games before the season's out and looks good. That doesn't mean his elbow's going to hold up all year long. That's my problem. I think he's sort of a ticking time bomb now. But then again, we did think the same thing about Masahiro Tanaka when he had the elbow issue. And he's got a tear in there, but it's never completely torn. In general, most pitchers are ticking time bombs. There are just some that are going to tick a lot quicker than others. And Price right now may be heading in that direction. Pitching is deep enough where I'm not going to feel the need to take a risk here. Like I said, not in the single-digit rounds. He lists the double-digit rounds in the league. I'll feel much more comfortable.
Yeah. So sticking with the Red Sox, the number one prospect in MLB, Andrew Benintendi. Manager John Farrell is still experimenting with lineups. This is according to MLB.com. But there's a scenario in which Benintendi could open the season as the number three hitter for the Sox. The fact that Farrell is even contemplating that move speaks of the level of the respect that Benintendi's advanced plate approach speaks to his advanced plate approach as a 22-year-old. But it's also a way for Farrell to kind of balance the lineup. His four best hitters are right-handed, so it's Pedroia. Basically, Benintendi would be the only left-handed hitter of those five. It would be Pedroia at leadoff, Bogarts, then Benintendi, then Betts, then Ramirez. So clearly putting him amongst those hitters, he already had some value, George, but putting him in that slot just leads to more production for Benintendi. So that could change the outlook that people have on him, I assume.
It could, but I doubt that's he stays there. That's dangerous to put his first full season in the majors. You're going to put him in the third slot here. Gee, no pressure there. So I don't see that lasting. It's not like this is a team that's not deep on offense. They don't have to do this.
Right.
I think the theory behind this is you want to put the lefty in between the righties. And I get it. When you're telling you can't finagle that lineup around here to avoid this. Now, granted, there's no David Ortiz. There's no big lefty there to take that. Sort of that spot in the middle of the order here. And you're not going to put Mitch Moreland in there. Pedroia's a righty. Sandoval's a bomb. Bogart's righty. I get it. Bradley's not really that prototypical either. So I guess it depends on how you line up construction. If you're insistent on breaking up your righties with that lefty, then maybe. But in the end, I just don't know if you want to do this to Benintendi. I also don't know if he profiles that kind of play, your third place hitter. I think Benintendi actually fits more as your second place hitter.
I tend to agree with you, actually.
Yeah, that's where I would go.
But what's interesting, I guess, is you're right. You don't have to do that. But because of the strength of that lineup, you can. If I'm taking the opposite approach, he is protected there. Now, you don't want to mess around, frankly, with the number three hitter on a contending team all that much. And this could be just spring training fodder. But given that the dynamic as explained, he could do that, even if it's just for a period of time. I don't know, you know, and what better way than to do it right out of the gate if it doesn't work 2 weeks into the season and you're back to shifting some other things around. So that's the only thing I would say, taking the opposite approach. He could do it given the strength of that lineup.
You could. I mean, listen, you could just tell Benintendi, I said, don't worry about batting third. You know, don't make a big deal of it. We're just putting the lineup together the way we want to put it together. I mean, you and I are Yankee fans. Joe Girardi generally bends over backwards and breaks every bone in his body to go lefty-righty, 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 lefty-righty. He's a big believer in that. And I get it. It really forces managers to make tough decisions later on in games. It's also the reason why these games take 88 hours is because when you do this lefty-righty, lefty-righty, then the opposing manager is going to keep going different relief pitchers every batter. You know, and that's why these games take a while. But that's the specialization of the game here. In some ways, I think it's overblown here. You know, it doesn't matter to me either way. Benintendi, in my mind, would be a better second place hitter. Wouldn't that, in some ways, serve the same purpose? I mean, if you're going to bat Betts 1, Benintendi 2, Bogarts 3, you're still separating your righties there. I understand. Maybe, you know, you'd rather have him bat 3 and 2 righties, a lefty, a righty, another. Then you go righty, lefty, righty, lefty, the rest of the order. It does fit better when you look at it. I get that. But in the end, no matter what Boston does, they're going to score 850 runs plus.
Yeah, and especially when the three righty hitters are Bogarts, Betts, and Ramirez, you're going to be fine. You know, we're not worried about those guys in general. You don't have to have a perfectly balanced two righties, then a lefty, then two more righties. I think just setting it up at the top of the order, as you said, is perfectly fine. And that being said, speaking of baseball and speaking of your best way to get great fantasy baseball advice, you should go to Roto Experts, because the rotoexperts.com exclusive Edge Fantasy Baseball Package for 2017 is here. So stay ahead of the competition with in-depth articles and insights from our award-winning analysts. Prepare for your draft with our new and improved cheat sheet generator. Get access to fully sortable projections and over 800 player profiles. Enter promo code FREERADIO at checkout for a special discount on the rotoexperts.com exclusive Edge Fantasy Baseball Package. George is in there doing the closer report. I know you'll have another update coming in the next couple of weeks, George, right? Yeah, you did it kind of at the onset of spring training. There'll be another one coming up soon, yes?
Yeah, there hasn't been all that many hits there, so sometimes we do three. Sometimes I would do one about now, then one at the end of spring training. You know, I just wait for Tim McCullough, our editor. The man, Tim, helps me out a great deal, makes my life so much easier. But when he says he wants a second one, he's the boss. I write a second one. And then during the season, it's every Tuesday.
Tim McCullough is the man. So that's it. Go to rotoexperts.com. Check out that exclusive Edge package. And George and I will be back with the Roto Experts in the morning after this. Welcome back to the Roto Experts in the morning. Mistimed my whole eating during the break situation, but I want to give you some sense of what's coming up later today. Roto Experts in the morning will be here till 10, so you got another 90 minutes with us, and then Fantasy Bagels and Baseball with Tony Cincotta and Cha-Cha. That's from 10 to 12. Then
is Cha-Cha going to punch a big hole in Tony's head? A bagel-sized hole?
Yeah, apparently. Apparently there's some arguing going on, and Cha-Cha and Tony will get into it.
Really? Cha-Cha arguing?
Yeah.
No.
That's what he does. That's what Cha-Cha does. So.
By the way, does anybody really believe English muffins are better than bagels?
I actually really like English muffins.
So do I, but listen, bagels are better.
Well, kind of hard to argue that.
Are you having English muffin or a bagel right now?
No, a Kind bar. I'm trying to be trying to not eat bagels every morning, which because they're so easy to do, but I'm trying not to do that. In any event, sorry that I'm eating on air, but in any event, 10 to 12, Fantasy Bagels and Baseball, FanRag Fantasy Baseball with Al Melchior, that's 12 to 1. Then the producers, with Pete Considori, Chris Pavona, that's 1 to 3. They got Rusty's Fantasy after that, Fantasy Basketball Weekly, a replay of Florio and Stanfall. Replay of the Weekend Fantasy Update with Joe Colina, Mike Florio, and Frank Stanfall. And then you'll hear various shows after that, Fantasy Bagels and Baseball, and we'll get replayed. And Out of Bounds will air tonight from 10 to midnight, I believe, with Mike Cardano and friends. So a lot of good stuff on for the rest of the day. And Fantasy Bagels and Baseball will back us up. So in any event, George, back to a couple other pieces of news, fantasy-relevant news. So right-hander Sonny Gray has been diagnosed with a moderate lat strain and won't throw for at least 3 weeks. So the A's do not have their opening day starter or opening night starter come these next few weeks. As this says, Gray is no stranger to setbacks. He's had two lengthy disabled DL stints last season. But he came to camp healthy and was trying to put that all behind him. I know he's kind of a guy that we looked at as risky, but at the same time, perhaps would be able to get him at some value. And now, question marks abound with a guy who was hurt last year. He starts off the season hurt again.
I mean, pretty much all I can say about Sonny Gray is I would take David Price ahead of him. All right, and I'm not big on Price. I mentioned double-digit rounds for him. He pitched through 117 innings last year. Last year was a miserable season. He was hurt early and often, 5.69 ERA, 1.5 whip. So he's got a lot to prove there. And now he's got a lat strain, something that doesn't, you know, lat strains, oblique strains, they don't heal right away. So this is certainly concerning there. 3 weeks of rest means he's pretty much out for the rest of spring training, almost certainly begin the season on the DL. So now you're looking at mid-April, maybe even May before he returns here. Oakland, bad team, so you were chasing wins with him anyway. They were going to be difficult. Once again, this is almost like a no-thank-you situation. You want to get him late, you know, for a song and a dance. Okay, nothing. If there's nothing to lose, I'm fine with it. Any kind of value, no. I'm not taking, I'm not wasting the pick. This, it's starting to look like this another season where, okay, when does he pitch? How healthy is he when he pitches? How good will he be? You know, are we going to see the Sonny Gray from 2015, where, you know, a 2.73, 1.08 whip guy, or last year where he bombed? I don't know. You know, Oakland, bad team, so he was already, you know, he's pretty much a three-category pitcher now. No, thank you. I'll stay away.
Yeah. You know, you hit on exactly what I was going to ask you, and you know, what kind of pitcher do you think he actually is? The injuries are obviously a devastating part of what's going to happen with him both last year and now starting off this season. But were you, if he was healthy right now, were you willing to take a chance in that Sonny Gray really was more the pitcher from 2014 and 15, where he got 14 wins a year and he was, his ERA averaged below 3 and his whip was in the 1.1 range overall. So were you leaning more towards that he was that type of guy? He's only 27 years old.
I think when it comes to Sonny Gray now, we did so I haven't done a live draft yet. I have done a couple of the Roto Experts mocks and a couple of mocks on my own. And no, I didn't have him in any league. I wasn't staying away from him. I just hadn't had a chance to pick him. My thoughts on Gray as far as drafting are this. I was wondering if he would fall where he'd be a very good value because people would remember last season too much. You know, one bad season is not a, you know, hey, it happens. You know, he got hurt, blah, blah. It's nothing to really freak out about. But now it's becoming habitual, and that's a problem for me. You know, I what do I like to say, Mike? Most important ability, availability. And right now, I don't know if he's going to have that. Pitch is already hurt, spring training. Granted, it's not an arm injury, so that's good. You know, we don't hear about an elbow or a shoulder or something like that, and that's good. But when I look at him, you know, most things were 5x5. You know, wins, strikeouts, ERA, whip, saves. You know, he's not getting saves. Now he's a four-pitch pitcher. Even his strikeouts in his best year, he wasn't a strikeout-per-inning guy. They were good, but not great. You know, and now if you're going to take away wins, because let's face it, if he's going to miss a couple weeks of the season, his best-case scenario might be 10 wins, 10, 12 wins. That's not great. So now, I mean, how many categories can he possibly help you win here? So once again, not touching him anywhere near single-digit rounds wasn't anyway. But now he becomes a guy, SP 5, 6, 7, a bench guy. That's about where he is for me. I just don't want him. I just don't see the upside.
Yeah, I mean, this is really recent news. And, George, based on his ADP, I think people were kind of in that mindset because we have Sonny Gray listed as the 57th starting pitcher, according to the NFBC, 212th overall. He's being drafted right behind, on average, guys like Aaron Nola, Jared Eichhoff, Michael Pineda, just in front of guys like Robbie Ray, Drew Pomeranz, Drew Smyly, Adam Wainwright. So there wasn't a lot of confidence in him, and I think this, you know, he takes a hit. I think you're right. He's probably more a bench guy than anything else. Obviously, he'll have to be a bench guy to start the season, but really long-term prognosis, I mean, you probably got your fingers crossed for double-digit wins.
Yeah, you really do. I mean, you mentioned 57th overall, 12-team league. That puts him at a starting pitcher 5. That's about where, and I think it's about right. So he may be at the back end of your rotation. Really,
and that's without this news even impacting that yet.
Yeah, he'll fall into the 70s and 80s now. He'll fall down even further. These guys are really going to stay away. Like I said, my problem, when I look at guys like this, I want to see upside, and I don't see it. He's already hurt, so he's going to miss at least half of April, I imagine, if not all of April. We know W's are going to be tough to come by anyway, as Oakland's a bad team. So where's your upside? It's not like this is a 1.2, 1.3 strikeout per inning guy where he's going to get 250 strikeouts. Okay, well, he's worth it. He'll help you in that category. I just don't see a category he's going to help me in.
Yeah, it's a rough deal for him. Unfortunately, guy just a couple of years ago who, you know, he really did put up some good stats, and it was something, a guy that seemed to be on the rise, but just really these injuries have taken a hold of him. I'm just trying to look up one last thing here because, yeah, there we go. Sorry. One other guy. Yeah, one other guy. I mean, you know, there's no, you'd have to be in like his, in that 50. I just saw a piece of news on it. And it's guy's name that I've just seen a whole bunch. And it's really not going to impact you unless you're in a super deep league like Matt Modica's 50 round league. But I saw Andrew Kashner is another guy who.
He's banged up too. No, thank you.
Yeah. Exactly. So that was the news that came out. He's received a pain-relieving injection into his right shoulder after being examined in Dallas on Friday. He's expected to return to Arizona and begin a light throwing program, shut down because of soreness in his right biceps tendon. The Rangers don't expect him ready for the start of the season. Normally, a starting pitcher takes 6 to 8 weeks of a throwing program to get ready, but it may not take that long with Kashner because he's been throwing for 3 months before being shut down. So, again, that's somebody in really deep leagues is the only time it's going to impact you, but I just thought it was notable because he's a name that I've, you know, frankly, in fantasy baseball circles been bandied about for several years, and it just hasn't materialized for him in a positive way.
Yeah, I mean, Kashner, you're right. He's a name guy. So with San Diego, okay, I was in the big Boston trade years back. I think might have been part of the Adrian Gonzalez deal. Not 100% sure there, but I believe he was involved in that, and yeah, it hasn't worked out. Listen, there are just some pitchers, you know, the human body is not meant to throw overhand, and certain pitchers are not going to be able to handle it no matter how many chances they get. You know, so Kashner, somebody, I didn't want anything to do with him anyway, going from San Diego to Texas, American League, no thank you. That's in my mind, a recipe for disaster there. Even if he was healthy, it wasn't touching, not as reserved, not as a bench, not as nothing, didn't want him, and this news is just, you know, puts the cherry on top of that pie.
Yeah, I was looking to see if you were right about the Adrian Gonzalez trade. I don't think so.
No, I'm not anywhere near 100% sure.
He was involved in the
Anthony Rizzo
trade.
All right. Oh, worse.
Traded by the Cubs to the Padres for Zach Cates and Anthony Rizzo. Then traded by the Padres with a couple of guys and cash for Luis Castillo, Carter Capps. So anyway. He signed his free agent this year with the Rangers, and they will not be benefiting from him, at least for the start of the season. So we'll get to some more news and notes in MLB. It's George and Mike on the Roto Experts in the Morning. Back on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, George and I just kind of going through some news and notes. Guys, know, a guy that you and I talked about in the past, George, and I know you were working trades for him in your one of your keeper leagues is JT Realmuto. And just a piece of news that came out. Piece of news that was talked about yesterday is that they're introducing him to first base, trying to get him some more at-bats when he's getting rest behind the plate. They want his bat in the lineup. So I don't know if it changes your value on Realmuto, but maybe from a long-term perspective, you and I have talked about how we just wish Buster Posey would kind of make that move over to first base. And with Realmuto, it looks like he's being introduced to first base this spring, offering a right-handed hitting option for left-handed hitting Justin Bauer. So he played five innings there yesterday or the day before, and they're giving him a look base for a couple of reasons. They don't have that natural right-handed position for Bauer, and secondly, if he makes around 20 starts in the position, he can still get his at-bats without going through the rigors of the daily grind behind the plate. That's according to MLB.com. So thoughts, positive, negative, just getting some extra at-bats. You're happy about that?
Oh, it's a positive. I mean, we've seen this before. You know, Matt and I hit on this yesterday, not on Realmuto specifically. This news came out after the show, but about how a lot of teams don't want their, if you're that good a catcher, you know, you're that good a baseball player, they don't want you playing catcher long term because wear and tear on the body. You'll have a shorter career. That's why Buster Posey probably will move. We've seen this with Craig Biggio. You know, back in the day, you're the Yankee fan. Thurman Munson played some of the outfield for the Yankees. People forget that. Once again, get him out from behind the plate. You know, and a little make that body feel a little better. So I think this is good news here. What this could mean is, generally, on average, catchers get one day off a week. Baseball week is 26 weeks long. So that's 26 games they're going to miss. If he can play 10 or 12 of those at first base, you know, if his day off happens to be against that tough left-hander, so that Bauer sits and Realmuto plays first, that's gold, right? That's an extra 50 at-bats you might get from Realmuto during the season. So, yeah, I said, what's the bad news here? I'd like to see anybody tell me, oh, no, that's terrible. Why? He still has catcher eligibility this year and next. Nothing's going to happen there. And you might get more games out of him. This is nothing but good news.
Yeah, and, you know, it's funny you say that, George, about catchers and how they get moved out. Like, some of the greatest catchers of all time, they just stopped catching at some point, you know? Yogi Berra and Johnny Bench just stopped catching for the most part, playing various positions around the field in order to extend those careers. And that was at a time when, you know, clearly you had to do it because they didn't have the ability to kind of rehab guys and guys didn't take care of their bodies in the way that they do now. So ultimately you want to get those guys from behind the plate and just extend that playing career. Gosh, I was hanging out with a friend this weekend at some of these tournaments, and he's a friend I know just in a business world, but he played catcher his whole life, like from the time he was 6 years old through college. He's not a professional baseball player, but, you know, played scholarship at a good university, and that guy can't walk now. Like, he's toast. Like, he needs both knees to be replaced. He's in his 40s, just to give you an example of, like, you know, it's funny every time I hang out with him, it's kind of in your face as to what kind of damage that position can do.
Absolutely. I mean, and that's playing any kind of sport is going to hurt you. You know, you're playing it over and over again. Catching is just brutal. It's all that squatting. You think you squat thousands upon thousands of times a year. You know, and you get hit with balls. You get hit with bats. You get hit with runners. It's just, what do we call catching? The tools of ignorance, right? That's what it's called because, that you know, it's just not. It's not for the faint of heart. So I'm not surprised here. Not surprised at all. I mean, I tell a joke. It's actually not a joke. It's true. I played a lot of hockey, a lot of deck hockey, roller ice, whatever. But that's a lot of pounding on my legs. And not too long ago, you know, I wake up, I'm married. I wake up in the middle of the night, go to the bathroom, have hardwood floors in my bedroom. And my wife happens to hear, goes, you know, because she hears, she goes, is that the floors creaking? I'm like, no, honey, that's my bones. and yeah, I know what it's from. It's from the hockey.
Yeah, getting old sucks. And I know you've had an ACL and all that other kind of stuff too, so that doesn't make it any
easier. Yes, fun stuff.
So, yeah. So as we continue to go through, Raul Mondesi was shut down yesterday to recover from a collision at first base during an 11-7 loss against the A's on Friday night. Showed symptoms of a mild concussion. You know, every sport now has kind of followed I don't even remember. This is a chicken and egg scenario, but the NFL obviously has a pretty specific concussion protocol now, and other sports have followed suit or at least were concurrently working on their concussion protocols, and Mondesi's being kind of reevaluated today. Royals manager Ned Yost seemed hopeful that Mondesi would be available to practice again in a day or so. So this doesn't appear to be anything long term, but anytime there's a concussion, you just want to be mindful of it. Mondesi, kind of a speed guy, stolen base guy for those of you drafting.
Yeah, they say Moxie Yost came out yesterday. Mondesi doesn't have a concussion. Yeah, whatever. I have to hope they're lying anyway. Mondesi's had a pretty big spring so far. He's batting, what, 450, home run, a couple of ribbies here. Interesting. You know, very interesting if he can actually he's only 21. So it's not that they need to push him, but they could use a second baseman. I'm curious to see what's going to happen here with him. Once again, when you think Mondesi, we're hoping for some little speed there. Doesn't hurt your average. I don't love the player, you know, because when I look at his numbers in the minor leagues, yeah, he never stole more than 24 bases, and even that was in 13. Home runs is almost non-existent, never more than 8, so you're not getting much power. So where's the upside fantasy-wise here? That's what I keep looking for. Where's the upside? You know, speed, but is my average going to take a blow?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, certainly possible, but in any event, Mondesi dealing with that. We'll see how it goes long term. Another, you know, as we continue to go through injury stuff, shortstop Corey Seager is still out indefinitely with a mild oblique strain. The Dodgers welcome back Trace Thompson to the lineup in yesterday's win over the Angels. It's his first game he played since two fractured vertebrae forced him to miss the second half of last season. He went 0 for 3 with two strikeouts, but he's back in the mix. So thoughts on... Are you worried about the Corey Seager thing long term? He's out indefinitely, but it's a mild oblique strain. We just talked about Sonny Gray with that lat strain. Thoughts on how this could impact Seager, or you think they're just being super cautious with that valuable asset?
Well, you know, I said it, lat oblique, you want to be cautious because, you know, baseball, swinging that bat, I mean, my God, yeah, it's violent. So, you know, that oblique's not healthy, it can easily be pulled again or torn or whatever. So I'm actually kind of happy they're pulling him out, playing it cautious. I like that. We have to remember, it's only March 12th, 3 weeks from today's opening day. You know, batters generally need 2 weeks, maybe 2.5 weeks at most to get ready for a season. You know, so he still has plenty of time. So I'm glad they're holding him out. This has not changed my position on him at all. You know, I haven't moved him down. Maybe I've moved him down a slot or two just to recognize the injury. But I won't panic about this, Mike. Now, next week, if we're on the show, if we're talking about this again and he still hasn't played, okay, now we're talking 2 weeks until the regular season. I'll be a little bit more concerned then. But right now, I'm all fine. All, you know, I'm good with him. I would draft him second round without a problem.
Yeah, I actually do think – it wouldn't surprise me even slightly, George, if we are here next week and he hasn't played yet. Given that asset, given who the Dodgers are and where he fits in the long-term plan of this team, and certainly for the 2017 plan, I think they're just going to be cautious to a point that it's obnoxious, where he'll be saying he's fine. He'll be taking batting practice, hitting off tees, whatever he needs to do, and I think they'll still – just try to limit him as much as they can. So it won't surprise me, and I still won't even be worried until we're about, you know, a week out. That being said, it's draft season, so you don't have the luxury of knowing exactly what's up.
Yeah, I mean, you know, what's the joke I like to say? When can you tell a coach is lying or a team is lying? When their lips move. And at this time of year, they're all lying. You know, we don't know for sure how it is. They're not going to give away any information. But I expect them to be fine. That's the bottom line for me, that I expect them to be fine. Listen, the injury does concern me. It's with baseball players, with batters, it's always anything with the ribs, anything with the chest bothers me.
Wrist.
Lats.
Wrist.
And, yes, and the wrist, because that zaps power. Those are two injuries I worry about the most, wrist, hand injuries for that. Pitchers is the obvious, you know, shoulder, elbow. That's what raises red flags there.
Yeah, anytime a guy has a wrist injury, second I hear it, I'm like, you could just write him off for the rest of the year because it's never going to heal. It just won't. It's going to take months of rest in order for it to heal. So, but you're right, the lat oblique sort of midsection type of injuries are brutal. It's why, like, the Matt Harvey thing, like what is the test case for guys coming back from this and doing really well? Could he? He's a bulldog. He could do it, but I don't like his chances personally. Well, that's it. 2 hours down, 1 hour to go. We got through an hour in MLB. We got through an hour in NFL. We'll mix it up in hour number three. I bet you George and Pete will talk some hockey when we come back. Mike and George on the Roto Experts in the Morning, the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. 1 hour to go, folks.